Good day and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. I'm going to start the show today by stating what I think should be obvious by now. Our climate is changing. Extreme weather patterns are becoming more chaotic, more unpredictable, and more severe. And this isn't only experienced with wildfires in Australia and California, but also with droughts in the American West, storms in Puerto Rico, and floods right here in Detroit. And as the climate continues to wreak havoc, every scholar who's taken seriously on this issue says the same thing. We need to do as much as possible, as quickly as we can, to switch to renewable energy sources. Doing that would prevent the planet from heating up as quickly as it is now. And it is that warming that is driving all of this climatic change. I don't want to be alarmist about this, but I do want to be honest. The consequences of not transitioning to renewables are clear because some of those patterns that are already here. There are more deaths, there is more suffering, there is more tragedy, disproportionately hurting those who are, of course, poorer and black or brown. And even if you're not someone who's touched directly by these things, you'll likely be watching them from a screen. That portal will transport you to disaster. All of us sit and watch, I think, on television and on our phones. Weather that doesn't make any sense. Crazy weather that we haven't ever seen before. Some of this is inevitable at this point. We've really passed the point where we can completely stop the climate change that's driven by the planet warming. But a lot of it is not inevitable. There are things we could slow. There are things we could reverse. There are consequences that we could make less severe. The most recent report on the effects of climate change was produced by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It has a number of pretty stark revelations in it, has some recommendations in it as well. To talk about what that panel and what it says, we have Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel here. She is the director of climate science for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Sciences. Dr. Eckwurzel, thank you for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Thank you so much. It's really good to be with you today.
So I want to start with kind of where I started in the open there, which is that we hear all the time now about climate change, and we hear about the consequences, and we see the consequences of it. But I don't know that most people believe or feel that there's a way to do anything about this, that the planet is warming, and whether you accept that it's because of the things that we're doing or some other natural phenomenon, there isn't a way to turn back at this point, that there isn't a meaningful way or a practical way to stop this from happening. I would like to have you just address that idea up front and tell me if that's the wrong way to be looking at this.
Sure. Thank you so much. That's so critical. And one of the key findings from this most recent report, and what, as climate scientists, we have been looking at, is that every fraction of a degree of global mean surface temperature warming really, really matters to people's daily lives. And there's no stopping the gains you would you would have in creating a world that is closer to today's global mean surface temperature compared to a world, the track we're on, which is what countries have promised with their pledges to reduce emissions, that is a very dangerous world. And that's what is really starkly, we have a narrow window and we are on the precipice of that. And that is why action now is more important than ever, because we lock in the next several decades of warming with every month. You know, you just go out several decades. Every month of our activities are locking in the next several decades. And the diversion and the expansion of risk, that bifurcation point is so critical that this report perhaps is the most important ever released.
So I also want to have you address the question of how we know and whether we know that this is all happening because of us. I think there are a lot of people who also have questions about that, who think, well, the planet has gone through cycles of warming and cooling for much longer than we've been on the planet, and that this could be just part of that. And maybe all we need to do is figure out how to adapt. Is that the wrong way to be thinking about this?
It's a fair point. And the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report has this great figure that directly addresses that. We know from past climate studies on Earth, through lots of evidence buried in the rocks, ice cores, you name it, volcanic ash layers, we know what the long-term temperature changes were and what the driving forces are. And there's a figure that shows a dramatic change in basically since the beginning of agriculture, about 10,000 years before present. If you start about 10,000 years ago, global mean surface temperature, we're hovering around this zero level because we're so used to that. And then right when you get to around 1950s, it starts going up. And then the projections for what we may be unleashing is way higher. We're already way higher than what humans have sown food, harvested fish around the world to keep ourselves alive and the species that are cohabiting this planet are used to. We are already in an unfamiliar world, but we can adapt to this because it's closer to the world we have. What we unleash in the future is what is truly, what this report is all about.
So I want to talk a little about the IPCC, this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, what it is, and what are these reports that they are regularly producing?
Sure. And it's a fair point. We've been hearing about these for a while because this is the sixth assessment report. They come out over around a year and a half period. So they are released every 6 to 7 years. And the first report is released about the science. This is the second report about the impacts and adaptation and vulnerability. I would say this is what is most important to Detroit and Michigan and, what our lives mean here and to others around the world. So it has about, say, 270 authors, more than 675 contributing authors, 67 countries have contributed their expertise, and it's approved by government policymakers around the world for the summary that kind of distills the top points. So policymakers ask for this because we want to know how is that going to affect our economic livelihood, risk to our citizens, people living anywhere in the world. So it's really the most comprehensive report. It's just released, and it's the best understanding yet of climate change. And let me just take less than 5 seconds to tell you one top line quote that they have, which I'd say is most stark. And listen to this. It says, the scientific evidence is unequivocal. Climate change is a threat to human well-being and the health of the planet. Any further delay in concerted global action will miss the brief, rapidly closing window to secure a livable future. This report offers solutions to the world. The window hasn't closed. We still have a lot of solutions we can deploy and avoid this.
And that language, it's very stark. It's very dire. Is it alarmist? Is it an overestimation of the danger that we face? I mean, I think that is also part of the problem here, is that people don't necessarily believe that we will face catastrophic futures if we don't change.
Yes, it is accurate. I have been studying this for several decades. It has been me and our colleagues from around the world who have been studying the impacts of climate change really understand the drivers. We can run global climate models and turn off human activities and see that the world would be much cooler today. We would have much lower sea level rise. We would have much less risk to outdoor workers in Michigan and Detroit who are trying to, you know, one of the things that's surprising is that with today's level of climate change, outdoor workers have, between 1992 and 2016, nearly 70,000 U.S. workers experienced heat-related illness or injuries on the job. I mean, these are the kind of things that, this is already at this level of climate change, which is about, you know, close to a degree Celsius above pre-industrial, or, you know, approaching 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit above pre-industrial levels. Mm. And so we're already struggling with today's level of climate change, and those that are out there working, you know, performing tasks that they have to do their jobs outside, delivering us goods, delivering our keeping us safe during COVID and things like that, they have an undue risk to some of the risks of climate change today, and we don't want to get that much worse.
I'm talking with Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel. She is Director of Climate Science for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Sciences. We're talking about the International Panel of Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and its newest report, which lays out the ways in which climate change, the warming planet, is affecting our lives, affecting everything on the planet right now, and gives us a pretty dire warning about the cost of inaction, the cost of continuing down the current path and not changing things to be more mindful of the emissions that we produce, that fuel that global warming. We want to hear from you as well during this conversation. Give us a call and tell us how concerned you are about climate change. And tell me this, we talk about climate change a lot on this program. We talk about reports on climate change. We have experts come on to talk about the things that we're seeing and the ways we need to change. Give me a sense of how seriously you take all of those things. Do you really buy into the idea that the climate change that we're seeing, that the weather extremes that we're seeing are the fault of human activity and human produced emissions? Do you buy into the coming chaos that is predicted, for instance, in this report, if we don't switch to renewable energies and away from fossil fuels? Also give us a call and tell us what you would be willing to do to change our lifestyles, to change our lives in a way that would be more respectful of climate and climate warning. Also, give us a sense of what you would like to see our policymakers, our lawmakers do differently to get us away from fossil fuels and toward renewable energies. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Dr. Eckwurzel, I want to drop a statistic into the conversation here. According to the IPCC report, approximately 3.3 to 3.6 billion people on the planet live in contexts that are highly vulnerable to climate change. Tell us what that means and tell us what that looks like.
Yes, there are many, many people who live in low-lying coastal areas that are at risk of being inundated by rising seas. And we see that there's going to be, when you have rising seas, there's also more powerful storms and tropical cyclones, typhoons, hurricanes, and these coming in on rising seas, but as well as being more powerful, because the seas are warming up, that is a fuel for a lot of engine to these storms powering them. They not only place lives at risk when they, say, come on shore, this extra rain that is sweeping when these storms come inland and they come sweeping up, lots of times they might miss Detroit and they be go a little further east, but a lot of time, if you look at the swirl of rain that is dropping and the intense precipitation in the eastern parts of the United States, a lot of that are from these hurricanes sweeping and dumping their rain. And we know from the change to date that they're dumping a lot more rain, which causes flood risk to our ancient infrastructure, bridges, roads that just aren't up to this level of climate change. So you could lose your life, you know, not heeding the don't go into those waters that you can't see the bottom of on a road that you go through every day. It's flooded. And people are losing their lives in their car, trying to flee, you know, or try to get home or try to rush somewhere, and they don't want to go a longer route, and so forth. So this happens in our country. It happens in places such as Bangladesh, parts of low-lying parts of Vietnam. And they're adapting, because those places that have seen these extreme events, they start really making adaptation plans more aggressively than other areas that may seem more immune. But we see also there's cold outbreaks from the Arctic coming down and freezing people in the winter when they are used to sort more mild winters over the past couple decades. And so one thing about climate change is that it is extreme heat is one of the areas that in many parts of the world, it gets absolutely uninhabitable during parts of the year. I mean, you have to have air conditioning. Yeah. You would not be able to be outside for very long.
Yeah. When we come back, we are going to continue this conversation with Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel about the IPCC report on climate change and the urgency that attends our changes, the changes to our lives that have to take place to stop the planet from warming. We will come back to your phone calls and your social media comments. Tim in Detroit, Mary in Royal Oak, Kevin in Sterling Heights, you'll be up first. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. We've also got a number of social media comments that we'll read. You can leave comments at Facebook or Twitter, and we can include you in the program that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. As always, thanks for tuning in. We're talking this hour about climate change and a new report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that lays bare the dangers that we face if we don't change the way that we live on the planet. The extreme weather that we're seeing develop all over the place is going to continue, is going to intensify. And the consequences of it are going to become more deadly if we don't move away from the use of fossil fuels and toward renewable energies. My guest right now is Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel. She's Director of Climate Science for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Sciences. We want to hear from you as well. Tell us what you think about climate change. Tell us how closely you even listen to discussions about climate change, which we have pretty frequently here on Detroit Today. How much are you willing to do? How many options are you willing to consider that would be different from the lives that we live right now in order to stop global warming? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook and to Twitter and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. Let's start today with Tim in Detroit. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's Kim from Detroit. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the doctor from Union of Concerned Scientists. You know, Stephen, you asked earlier about the tone of the report.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say this is not the first report from the IPCC. And one of the things that almost all the reports have in common is they say, well, you know, that previous report, we were too conservative. The situation's actually gone much further than we said, because scientists are going to cling to the things that they are most certain about. That's how scientists function. But in fact, we have more of a task in front of us than what they're laying out. And I just want to say really quickly, one of the most practical ways that people here in Michigan can affect their energy, make sure they get solar energy, wind energy, battery technology that's clean, is to talk to the Michigan Public Service Commission. Because right now they're trying to decide what kind of energy is going to be delivered from consumers' energy, which mm-hmm. delivers energy to a huge chunk of the state of Michigan. And that 15-year plan that consumers' energy is contemplating right now has to be approved by the Michigan Public Service Commission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is one completely and utterly practical way for many of the folks in our state to say, we're going to do something about our future. We're going to demand from our public regulators that we get clean, renewable solar, wind, and clean storage technology.
Mm.
And that's my piece on this.
Yeah, Tim, I love that you called, and I love that you're talking about something pretty practical that people can, first of all, wrap their minds around, but also maybe get involved and advocate for. I mean, I think that is one of the difficulties that we have, is getting people to understand what they can do, what's within their grasp to make this different or to help push this issue in the right direction. Dr. Eckwurzel, I wonder what your reaction is to what Tim's talking about.
Oh, it's one of the most critical adaptation options is tapping into people who live where they live. They know the solutions that will work for their communities and their larger communities, because that is where change happens. And engaging with the local policymakers is so key. That's where change can go beyond, it can go at faster paces than some national decisions, for example. The closer you involve people who are living with the decisions for their future, that is what's important. And a key part of that is understanding what's worth fighting for. So, for example, if you know we look at one of the reports, we call it Killer Heat, for Detroit and the county where Detroit is, in Wayne County. Historically, the number of days over 90 degrees are about 12 days, and only one day that's above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And if by, you know, just a couple decades from now, by 2036 to 2065, if we took no action on climate change, if we did not do some of the solutions the caller identified so well, you could have increased a heat index over 94, 50 days a year. And that's a very different kind of summer,
mm-hmm.
and especially within Detroit. And yet, if you were to take some, you know, concerted action, you could be closer to the level of the historical average. It's still going to be more days, but it won't be that number of days. It's a very different, you're talking, you know, you're approaching 2 months
mm-hmm.
of over 90 degrees with 50 days.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to read a couple social media comments before we go back to the phones. Marie on Twitter writes, in 1979 and 1980, I worked for the National Solar Heating and Cooling Information Center, Franklin Institute, Philly. That was a national clearinghouse for solar information. 9 toll-free hotlines busy all day. It shut down in March 1981, by President Ronald Reagan. Imagine where we'd be today, she asks, if we had not done that. Dave on Twitter writes, as weather worsens, I foresee more interruptions in power and logistics. We should be figuring out ways to reduce reliance on importing food. Michigan should be growing more of its own food instead of building housing on fallow farmland. Big Neo on Twitter says, to help combat climate change, citizens need the max solar panels on their homes, along with zero-axis windmills with battery backup. DTE Energy has regulations blocking that, and the GOP always comes up with a myriad of ways to not make changes to make things better. Appreciate all of those comments. Let's go next to Mary in Royal Oak. Mary, what's on your mind?
Hi, Stephen. Thank you, Mary, for having the speaker you have today.
Sure.
It's a very important issue, and appreciate you covering that. One of the things I just want to comment on, your question of asking everybody, do they buy into that language? I think you should say, do you believe it? Because buy into it kind of perpetuates that thing that it's alarmist thinking. I just buying into, you know, but anyway, the importance of it, what she was just saying about local level, you have to be so careful at the local level in elections, what the decision makers believe and what they're proposing to do, even at the city level or school board levels, both in Royal Oak, but mostly in Troy. There was a well-identified rare parcel, a large 96-acre parcel identified back in 1998, I believe, to be a globally rare Lake Plain Prairie remnant. And the teachers all gravitated around the idea. They didn't even know that existed in their school district. All the neighbors, organizations, people came and spoke at public hearings. And ultimately, the board in 2001 decided to protect the parcel, and it was being used for education. What a great thing. It was actually in their school district's nature preserve. But then, you know, 20 years later, new school board members come along and decide to dispose of all their properties. I mean, you know, school boards do have to fund their large student base and all their teachers. But the point is they decided to not ultimately develop all of it, but a portion of it. And this had already been voted for a nature preserve. So I think back to Richard Louv, I believe, that wrote Nature Deficit Disorder and has recently written other books, that children are so detached from nature and exploration and are all on technology, and that's great, social media and use of computers, but they're losing touch of actual experiential hands-on learning that really has been shown by research to provide the most long-term learning for students. I think the local elections, you have to ask what people's priorities are, if they own land, how they intend to utilize that land.
Mary, I bring that up. I really love that you called and brought up a lot of those points. Thanks again for the call, Dr. Eckwurzel. One thing that she's talking about in particular, I think, is quite important, and that's the focus on local policymakers, local decision makers. And I think again, there's a little bit of lost in translation there for people to figure out, okay, so how should I be voting in local elections to try to have an effect on climate change and renewables and things like that? It's something that I just don't think frames the way people think about those choices. And even if it did, or even if they were inclined to let it, they're not sure exactly what kinds of questions they should be asking.
That's a great question. I've asked that myself where I live. I mean, I'm a citizen of where I live, and I go to these meetings with the local members in my neighborhood trying to get better policies for renewables, and I run into barriers, and you advocate, you show up, and when you show up, you could see the, you know, people standing up who are elected leaders and suddenly paying a little more attention. So just asking the questions is even the first step. Secondly, as a scientist looking at the narrowing window that the IPCC is talking about, this is the decision decade. And you think about electing a policymaker that may serve a two-year term, a four-year term, a six-year term, and they might be reelected. That person is likely going to be dialing the temperature of our future, all the cities, all the places around. And one of the things the IPCC really emphasizes is that cities are the places are going to be huge engines of transformation and deciding what the future climate is going to be. So you're sitting in an area where you have agency, you have change, and the local policymakers will make a huge difference. One of the big things the IPCC emphasizes is most people will be living in cities, a lot are living in cities now, and there's so many nature-based and engineering approaches establishing what was mentioned by the previous caller, like some green spaces. Also, maybe incorporating urban agriculture. These have public health improvements, but more importantly, you have to couple that with social safety nets, you know, nets for disaster management, knock on doors during a heat wave, make sure our elderly population that may be isolated, that they are not keeping their, turning off the power because of, it might cost too much to keep the air conditioning on, or not knowing how to use fans properly, not getting to cooling centers. During dangerous heat waves, we have to be connected to our community and look out for each other to help make sure we survive.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Mary, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go to Kevin in Sterling Heights. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hey.
I think the problem is not that the average person doesn't take global warming seriously. It's that the global warming people don't take global warming seriously. If they were, they'd be looking at nuclear power. I mean, it's the only reliable long-term or I should say short-term technology to combat global warming. I mean, France may like Jerry Lewis movies, but they have a huge success in nuclear power. And at least as far as the nuclear power, we need to emulate that.
You know, Kevin, that's a great point, and it's a point I hear people make a lot about this conversation and the way it should be framed. So I appreciate the call. Dr. Eckwurzel, is nuclear power, which, as Kevin points out, it is the only currently available alternative that would produce the kind of power that that we need in terms of usage, right? Our demands on power. Should we be leaning harder into that space?
What's interesting, I mean, it is in the mix of the global supply. There are many issues, of course, and one of them is cost. Cost is quite high, very, very high. And when we look at the cost of many of the renewable energy, which you'll hear more about, it's much lower. It's also much lower than many of the fossil fuel options that we have. And the really amazing thing is when I have a storm coming through, I do have battery backup and I have solar, I see my neighbor's lights going out, but because the way the smart technology is, this is, okay, let's fill up that storage and not use it. I try to use as much solar power in my own power as independently, but during a storm coming, I don't. It's powered up and it waits till the storm passes because it knows that there's a storm coming. And the lights, you barely even notice the flicker. You see that the neighbors are all going out, and then usually the battery storage lasts through a power outage. When you're on the end of a line of a very large source of power that has to go through those transmission lines, you're losing efficiency and rather than locally generating it. But after the storm passes, you know, the sun is shining and you're up and maybe power lines have gone out because the trees and the ice storms have knocked out power lines. The whole distributed energy gives you little community hubs of resilience with storms. And so I really like the distributed energy model for many, many reasons. And the costs really bear out if we had better policies for taking care of those upfront costs.
And you would say no to nuclear and nuclear expansion?
I say look at all the options and see if it still competes, you know? I mean, look at all the options and what you invest in over the lifetime of a project and how much it costs. And also including, you know, I studied isotope geochemistry and looking at the bomb pulses up in the Arctic Ocean and measuring that 30, 40 years after we blew up these atmospheric tests, looking for tritium spikes in the Arctic Ocean, the fallout from nuclear, you know, how long these radionuclides have to be kept safe, and you have to have signs that last for species that come by and see where you buried this stuff and keep it safe. Those costs are often not really factored into the near-term costs, and they should be. But okay. Even the near-term costs are extremely high for nuclear.
Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel, it was really great to have you here for this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Coming up next, we're going to continue the conversation about climate change. We're going to focus a little bit more on climate change and what Midwestern states are doing to combat its worst effects. We're also going to continue to hear from you on the phones and on social media. Jason in Detroit, Robert in Detroit, we'll get to you. Hang in there. If you want to join them, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and the Twitter and put comments there. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We just spoke about what is going on at an international scale with regards to climate change. But what is the Midwest, the place that we all live, doing to transition to renewables? How fast is our region moving on this issue? And what about Michigan? To get the latest on this, we have invited James Geniak onto the program. He's a senior Midwest energy analyst for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. James, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with your initial impression of this latest IPCC report, and then let's talk about what's going on here in the Midwest and in Michigan.
Yeah, I think certainly the science is increasing in urgency of the need for us to act, not only on a global level, but really we need all levels from local to state to federal, taking action on climate change. And that involves not only mitigating our emissions to slow down some of the worst impacts, but also taking steps to invest in our communities, especially lower income communities that are most vulnerable to the effects of climate change.
And let's talk about Michigan and how we're experiencing climate change here. How does this look different than it did 10 or 20 or 30 years ago?
Sure. Here in the Midwest, we obviously don't have sea level rise, but we do have a tremendous resource in the Great Lakes. And what we've seen over the last few years is a tremendous variation in Great Lakes water levels, going from record lows to record highs. And that's challenging for sensitive ecosystems along the Great Lakes, but also threats to property damage and other effects. And that's in addition to the extreme storms and flooding that you talked about in the previous segment. Another key area for the Midwest is agriculture. It's a big part of our economy, and climate change is threatening farmers and creating disruptions in like traditional planting cycles, as well as flooding of crops. So we, as many other places in the world, we are seeing the effects of a changing climate and the need to take action.
Hmm. And what is the Midwest doing to really defend against climate change? More specifically, what are states in this region doing that we should be taking note of?
Well, Michigan is one of several Midwest states now that have announced and are pursuing greenhouse gas reduction goals. And the electric sector is one of the biggest areas of focus in the near term, not only to reduce carbon emissions from power plants, but because the main strategies that we have for decarbonizing other economic sectors like transportation and how we heat buildings is to convert those sectors to run on electricity. So we need a lot of clean electricity available to power those sectors. One of your previous callers mentioned the Consumers Energy Resource Plan that people have the ability to comment on right now with the Michigan Public Service Commission. And that's an example of how utilities in Michigan and other Midwest states are moving to retire old polluting coal-fired power plants and replace them with clean energy resources such as wind and solar power. And the key question is, how quickly are those coal plants being retired? And can we avoid investments in new fossil fuels like natural gas in that transition? Because natural gas is not a clean fuel. It has significant carbon emissions, and it's also risky from a cost perspective.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Call and tell us what you think about climate change, about the discussions about climate change, how much attention you're paying to them. We do it a lot here on Detroit Today, a lot in other forums. Does it all amount to white noise to you? Because maybe you can't figure out how to change the things that you maybe even believe need changing in order to slow the planet from warming. Again, 313-577-1019. You can also go to social media, put comments there. Let's go to Jason in Detroit. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen.
Hey.
I just wanted to say that I'm very supportive of the idea of converting to renewable energy, but I think sometimes we forget that we can't really replace all our fossil fuel use with renewable energy and maintain our existing lifestyle. We need to change the way we live, too. I've seen maps of covering in large areas with solar panels, what it would take to replace what we use in fossil fuels with solar, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So coupled with solar, we need to change. We need to tighten up our cities. We need to change how we grow our food, how far our food comes from, and the way we develop land. I just don't see it working without major changes in the way we live, and I think that's the hard part. That's going to be the hard part to sell to people.
Hmm. Jason, I have to say I agree with you. I think it's one of the hard parts of this. James Geniak, talk about the switch to renewables and the amount of power that we're all used to, and the on demand nature of it. Is that something that we need to be thinking about changing as well?
Absolutely, and a key part of our clean energy transmission has to be energy efficiency, and that involves technologies or upgrades to our homes and appliances to be able to use them and maintain a high quality of life, actually improve quality of life and the comfort of homes for people while saving energy and saving money. So at the same time that we are retiring coal and avoiding gas plants and building wind and solar, we also need to be investing in our homes, businesses, and communities. For instance, there's a tremendous opportunity and need in Michigan to weatherize homes, make them require less energy for heating and cooling. And especially if we prioritize investments in weatherizing homes to lower income communities, that has the potential, a tremendous benefit, not only to reduce emissions, but also to invest in those communities. And so I absolutely agree that energy efficiency and also making more affordable transportation options available to people, whether it's electric vehicles or strengthening public transit, is another way that we can make our daily lives cleaner and also save money.
So I wonder if you feel like that we're not doing an adequate, I guess, sales job on that question with most people, that you've got to be willing to change some things about your life in order for this to work.
Well, you know, the key thing that we need is more affordable technologies, mm-hmm. and more accessibility for people to learn about those and have access to them. So we talked about having options to weatherize homes and be able to have more energy efficiency appliances. We need policies and programs at the state and utility level that help bring the information to consumers, mm-hmm. and let them know that we have these options available, and also provide access to accessible financing and lower cost capital, so that these kinds of upgrades and changes to our homes and equipment can be accessible for everybody.
Yeah. Again, thanks for the call and the comments. Let's go to Robert in Detroit. Robert, I've got about a minute left, but go ahead.
Hi. Sorry, I originally wanted to say we need to plant more trees, miniature trees, so they don't have to get cut down with wires, and how that can provide shade for air conditioning, less air conditioning use and stuff like that. But, you know, the last couple of calls and what people are saying makes me think, why are we not making changes? Look what's going on in the world in Ukraine because of oil. And it's like, why are we driving pickup trucks? What are we hauling? I don't see anybody hauling anything in a pickup truck, and they're not very aerodynamic. They're gas guzzlers, and we're reaping, you know, we're reaping what we sowed by, you know, since Inconvenient Truth, in all of the decades we've been hearing about this, there's flooding in our cities constantly, and there people are cutting down the trees we have, and there's nothing soaking up the rain. And you know, the electric companies are cutting up all the trees, hacking them up. They're going to die. Climate change is also making the trees we have die because they're not weather resistant. Sure. So I mean, we do have to make personal choices. Sorry if I took too long.
No, that's okay, Robert. I really appreciate the call and those points. I've only got about 30 seconds left, James Geniac, but react to what Robert's saying.
Well, in terms of managing our flooding risk, mm-hmm. I think investing in our infrastructure and, again, you know, communities that are most vulnerable to urban flooding, investing in natural landscapes is part of a local response. And as we've talked about, urging elected officials at the state and federal level to help make cleaner technologies, cleaner vehicles, more affordable and available to consumers is a key piece of the climate and clean energy transition that we need.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, James Geniak, Senior Midwest Energy Analyst for the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. It was really great to have you here to talk about this issue with us on Detroit Today. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
That is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to have a really interesting conversation about the 6-part podcast series called Into the Depths, which is about one woman's exploration diving into the history of slave shipwrecks. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.